Welcome to Church Drunk, a spirited conversation about faith, reason, and libations. Woo! We are back in action during this Lenten season, recovered-ish from St. Paddy's Day.
Sure.
Although, full disclosure, like within, I don't know, maybe 3-4 hours of recording that, I got like violently ill.
Yeah, St. Paddy's wasn't the thing that laid you low.
Yeah, St. Patrick's respiratory flu to help me.
You forgot to say Christ in my lungs.
Christ in my lungs, Christ on my left and my right, yeah. So this is Church Drunk, and a couple things you should know if you are a first-time listener. We tend to be a little bit blasphemous, so we toe the line of heresy from time to time, though we are devout Catholics
in our own way. We're practicing active
It is our own
Catholics.
Brand, and hopefully you enjoy hearing about it, and you can incorporate it into your own brand of whatever it is that you happen to be. So we're Catholic, you don't have to be.
Yeah, I was wondering where you were going with that.
Yeah, good. I got there.
Yeah, good.
In addition, we tend to be a bit cursy. So if you don't like potty language and fart jokes, then maybe you should look elsewhere.
Yep. Reverent language is not promised.
Yeah, not at all.
Not at all.
I am Guess here with my co-host Dizzy. And
hello.
We always start off with the same question. Diz, what are you drinking?
I am drinking a cocktail of Guess's own concocting because he is the patron saint of themed cocktails in my life, at least.
All right.
And so this we are calling Guess's Penance.
Yeah.
And tell me, what is the rundown?
So we start with gin because I'm sick, and that seems like the healthiest of all the booze.
Made from plants.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's a lot of botanicals going on in there, and natural herbal remedies. So we add in a little bit of San Pellegrino Limonata. Because we'll be talking about sin today, and so we needed something a little sour.
Just rub that lemon juice in your eye, get those tears flowing.
We added a little bit of ginger beer to kind of balance that out. A little bit of spice going on in there. So we've got spicy, we've got sour, we've got the makings of some sin and reconciliation going on. But then we balance it all out in the end with a bit of apricot liqueur.
That's like the sweetness of absolution.
Exactly. It's that state of grace. So we round it out. So
that was some stinky, stinky explanation.
I love it. Yeah,
I am fully for it. Drink up. So we hope you make your own little beverage to enjoy while you listen to this.
Yeah.
You could make something along these lines, something to cry with, something to feel a little pain and then bring you back home.
Yeah.
Because it's all about healing in the end.
It should punch you in the teeth.
Uh-huh.
And then
makes you cry because you're sorry for whatever punched you.
But then comfort you with a little bit of sweetness and somehow in the end make you healthy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Guess is penance.
What is this like? It's like penance
reconciliation
and absolution. What are these random big ass Catholic words?
Yeah. So it's going to bring us all back to an email that we got a couple weeks ago from listener M.
Shout out M.
Yeah. Thank you for sending us so much to work with this Lenten season.
Pretty much the next little bit of time here, we're like, thanks, Em.
Yeah.
We got some fodder. We were actually kind of surprised that we had never talked specifically about the sacrament of reconciliation or penance or confession.
Or confession, depending
as it's
on
known.
What we
colloquially, I feel called still confession.
Yeah.
And then whatever you else want to call it, we'll talk about why you might choose one or the other.
Right.
But we've never really talked about that in a formal way.
No, and it is something that people, you know, just
we're
kind
glad
of
to do that.
In my life, people have asked questions about it. Like, non-Catholics have been like, what's
I think
the
it's
deal
up there
with, like, this
like
whole confession thing? Because it is one of the better known things about the Catholic Church.
And still fairly unique to the Catholic Church,
right?
So, like, other Christian denominations, in their own ways, do a lot of similar things. There's some practice of the Lord's Supper and of prayers and of gathering for worship and the order of things. Not a lot of other groups are doing confession. Like, I don't even know. I should have looked this up. Do the Episcopalians even do confession?
I'm not sure.
They may or may not. I'm sure there's some format of it. Perhaps that would be the only other people do it.
There tends to be some form of forgiveness built into a lot of Christian traditions, but also a lot of other, you know, like Yom Kippur, Day of Atonement,
we don't own forgiveness,
all that kind of stuff.
But like confessing.
Like sitting down and actually vocalizing it one-on-one with another human being.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think there's a little bit of an aura
an area
of mystique, an aura of mystique.
An areola of mystique.
I knew that you were going to end up saying areola. As soon as
I
had that mispronunciation slide out of my mouth, I was like,
so many Disney's saints gonna talk about and areolas life of right our now. Church trunk yep. listening follows so beats
the,
and breaths.
There's an areola of mystique that surrounds the sacrament of confession because there's
shit
that.
Gets dark.
There's that. Jesus. Oh, man. All right. Drink.
Cheers.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, in all seriousness.
Because.
Okay. Sure. Keep going. He's really
that,
trying.
There's that confidentiality to it. So people yes. want to yes. know, like, you know, like if a murderer sits down with a priest and confesses mm-hmm. murder, how come that priest can't then go to the cops and turn that murderer in? Like right. that, there's kind of that, you know, like there's doctor patient privilege, and there's lawyer client privilege, yeah. and there's priest confessor privilege that right. is like honored.
And I always, whenever people like bring this up, I always want to remind them, like, confession is not valid if you're not actually sorry and right. sorrowful and repentant yeah. of what you've done wrong. So if you murdered someone and feel truly, truly awful and sorry about that, then you should be okay accepting just consequences.
Right, yeah. I think most priests
or you
priests
wouldn't go
would,
to confession.
Would
you would just keep it a secret.
You counsel them to yeah. go and confess to somebody else.
Right, maybe they're going to confession to get the courage or the counsel or like right. the push they need to go
yeah.
handle it. But, you know, people aren't just going to confession because they just want to get it off their list
yeah.
and feel better. Like, you actually should feel bad about it.
Right. Although I would say that,
yeah.
you know, not to, to go back to where we kind of have spent a lot of our summer season and stuff, but...
Oh, go ahead. I don't mind.
The, or maybe, was it? Yeah, it was summer season. Or no, Christmas season, rather.
Mm-hmm.
The whole controversy of the church right now and you know, this,
yeah.
this secrecy that's going on and behind closed doors, I think that's where you probably have a lot of these priests who have done awful, atrocious things, going and sitting down with other priests and using that barrier of the sacrament of confession and saying, well, here's what I've done. And then they have to try and counsel each other through it. And that's how you end up with bishops who probably know things,
yeah.
but can't do things like with a clear conscience for some reason, you know, like they feel like if it's told to them in this sacramental setting
mm-hmm.
that they don't have a legal responsibility to do anything with that information.
Okay, but my question is still, though, like, why would the perpetrator want to confess it?
I think it's probably, I mean, maybe I'm giving them too much benefit of the doubt, you know, which I've, you know, slapped my hand because I've been down this road before. I think it's really hard for them to, like, you know, feel like they are, whether it's they are, you know, a clinical pedophile and they're
yeah.
attracted to, you know, young people
fuck, yeah.
or whether they're just, you know, sexually just pent up with all sorts of confusion and anger and all kinds of things.
Yeah.
And that's what drew them to the priesthood, is that it was a place where they could just kind of continue to like suppress that hopefully,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't, it leaks out. I don't think that you get to the point where you're abusing children and not feeling some sort of contrition about that.
So that's really interesting because I kind of feel like once they cross that line, and maybe this reveals like what we think about like
yeah.
people's hearts, but like I feel like once they're like, you know, chronic abusers and hiding this whole life, I think at least in their minds and hearts, like they're just faking their priesthood. They're just faking their faith at that point.
Hmm.
I don't think that they would even, if they're still actively doing that, they're not really sorry for it. They're not going to go to
yeah.
confession for that.
Yeah.
I don't know if they were, it's almost more distasteful for me to, and this is all like already like in the toilet level
right,
of distaste,
know, right, yeah.
but like to imagine like this circle of priests like confessing this horrendous stuff to each other.
I would like to think
that they were doing this and knew it because they're adults and can observe this stuff and yeah. were just moving each other around to cover their own asses. Like, I don't want to think that they could be doing that and then still have enough of a faith life in their hearts to be like,
yeah.
but I really should confess this. Like,
I think
I
want to
believe that they're fully gone.
Yeah,
you know,
no, I think that they can because really, when you look at it, when you
yeah.
take a step back, and we know this from
sure.
from experience, not you know intense traumatic experience, but
yeah.
you know, like from looking at the landscape of our own life in the church, we know that there are priests who have done really bad things behind closed doors, who also have done really good things for the church in a public-facing role, right?
Like, I will give you that.
Parishes can thrive under real bad people.
But there are levels of bad.
Yes, there are.
And I think that in particular, you know, the predatory level of abuse of children is different than other kinds of
but I think
of offenses.
I think that there's probably,
and I don't know that they would be confessing those other kinds of offenses either.
I don't know. Like, I mean, I can't say for sure.
Nobody
but
knows.
I think that they probably that there have been certainly instances where priests have broken their vows, like with a consenting adult, and then they take that to their confessor. And they have to kind of work through that.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
And then the confessor then, you know, like within church rules, cannot then go running to the superior and say so-and-so broke his vows.
No.
Like, it's not allowed.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like they can always advise and they can say, hey, if this is really something that's weighing on you, maybe you should go to the superior and tell them what's happened or something like that. But it's to me, in my mind, it's not a huge step to go from, you know, breaking. No. Okay. Let me, before I say something that is really going to come out wrong.
Oh, man.
It is a huge step to go from breaking your vows with a consenting adult to breaking your vows by abusing a child, right? Like, those are two very different things. But in terms of taking a sin that you have committed to confession, I think for priests, the way that they look at it, where everything is prohibited, any kind of sexy time is prohibited, that for them to say, well, I broke my vows with this, that, or the other, it's kind of like, you know, there's degrees there, but not necessarily the huge degrees that we see. I don't know, you know.
Yeah,
like,
it's a disgusting and interesting question, and back full circle to what you said, like, and we will never know.
And if it's as prevalent as we are finding out that it is,
yeah,
it may not seem like that unusual of a thing to them.
Oh, shit.
You know, like you just sit down with your confessor and you go, yeah, add me to the list.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Like, everybody's doing it, so. Yeah. Anyway, so that
everybody drink
got out of control quickly.
Well, you know what? I'm just sitting here thinking, like, man, no matter what, I guess we should have known, like, talking about sins and the forgiveness of them would have brought us this. But, like, this is just a thing that we're going to be talking about all the time, and it's going to seep into everything.
It has colored our church.
It's a big problem.
Yep. But today we're talking about Sacrament of Reconciliation.
Yeah. So it's private.
Yes, it is
that
private.
That is true still.
And the priest who hears the confession has no legal, he is protected under various different, you know, legal statutes that he does not need to break that confidentiality.
Right.
Does not have to go to the police if people confess crimes.
And it will be
like
interesting to see if that is ever going to be challenged in the modern courts.
Yeah.
I could see that happening.
Totally. Yeah.
Okay, but for the run-of-the-mill folks.
Right. A basic rundown of Sacrament of Reconciliation, Penance, or Confession. Why would you say one or the other, and which one do we prefer?
Yeah, so what it is confessing.
Yeah, you sit down with the priest, you say, here's the things I've done wrong.
Yep.
There is a format to it, for those of you that might be curious. You're supposed to sit down. You don't have to start out with, like, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It has been X amount of time since my last confession.
Isn't that, like, one of the things that's, like, so much in, like, movies and shows?
Totally.
Like, I feel like a lot of non-Catholics, like, think that it's that way, like, all the time. Like, in a confession. And it could be.
And when you're learning how to do it, it's kind of scary because you do feel like if you say the wrong thing, if you don't follow the format, then you're going to get in trouble. But when you sit down with a priest, you realize most of these priests,
they're so glad you're there.
Yeah, just don't give a shit what you say. Like, they literally, and you can say anything. And they've heard some awful things, probably. And they're sitting down with, like, a second grader or a, you know, fifth grader or a junior high kid.
Yeah.
And they're like, kid, like, what's the worst that you could tell me right now, you know? And they really are there for the most part. You know, there's always, I've heard stories of exceptions to the rule. I've never experienced it. But, you know, like, there's priests who say, well, you're doing it wrong right now, or you need to say this prayer this way or something like that.
Oh,
but for
I've
the
never
most part,
that either.
They sit down and they listen and they comfort and they offer advice. And it's just a conversation.
Right. And I think the formula is nice because it is sort of a tense thing. Like, if you are going to confession, you kind of get yourself a little worked up ahead of time.
Because a lot worked up ahead of time. Like,
you
want to
hear about
second
grade guess here. But no matter how old you are when you're going, like, you know, you're a little sad. Like, you're a little worked up. You're a little anxious because you're going to be talking about all this bad stuff you've done.
Right.
And so having the formula is a sort of comfort because you just start with that. And yes. It opens it, and then the priest usually says, okay, like, what is your confession? And you're like, well, I did this, this, and this. And right. then they talk to you about it, and you pray, yeah. and then they bless you and absolve you, and you're done.
Yeah. And depending on how well you know the priest, it can either be much more comfortable to sit down with him and say, hello, Father, how are you? Than to say, you know, like, bless me for I have sinned, da-da-da-da. Or it could be much more awkward to sit down and say, hello, Father, how are you? You know, like, it really depends.
That's, like, kind of a side question. I was going to ask you this. Do you like to go to confession to priests that you know, like, who would recognize you? Or do you like more anonymous?
You know, if you had asked me when I was, like, younger, I think I probably would have told you that I wanted someone who I at least knew who they were. You know,
right.
like, I was familiar, a familiar face or somebody who I kind of had a bearing on who they were, whether or not they knew me really well. But as I've gotten older, it's mattered less and less,
mm-hmm.
you know, like it's just two different styles. If it's someone who I know really well, I can sit down and I can have a conversation with them. And it's more along the lines of spiritual direction. You know,
right.
like I'll talk more about like a spiritual crisis with a priest that I know really well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
and that's interesting. So you go for different reasons.
Because
maybe.
I kind of tend to dig, you know, like I don't just list off the things that I've done. I try to get to the root of why am I doing those things wrong, right? Like what are
you
the
have
patterns
to work for
that
them.
I'm seeing? Yeah. And whereas if I go to a priest that I don't know that well, it'll be a little bit more of a, okay, here's my list of things that I'm struggling with or that I'm doing wrong, and then, you know, move on with life.
Yeah.
Hmm. So, yeah. So it's two different styles, and I like them both. They both have their place.
Totally.
Yeah. What about you?
You know, kind of, I prefer anonymous in general, or like, and I like face-to-face confession. I don't mean like with the screen, but, I don't, when I was younger, I liked to go to them who knew me, and I still will if they're like much older than me.
Yeah.
Cause it's more like you said, like the advice thing, and I don't mind, but, as we get older and know more of them at more of a peer level, I don't, because it's the skeptic in me.
Yeah.
Cause like, I'm like, there's no way you don't think about this later.
They can just forget it. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. I'm not going to do that to either one of us.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Totally.
So I prefer, and I actually have to say, like, we should say this too. Like, I actually really love confession. Like, that is like something I am always happy to do. Not happy to do, but like I do it and I like the experience.
Yes. I would put it among the things that I really enjoy and appreciate most about the Catholic traditional stuff, you know, that, you know, like we talk about how we enjoy and appreciate the sacraments for being something tangible, but this one really is something where there is a physical sense of relief that comes with it. When I finish the process and I can just take a breath and move out, which is not to say that you can't get that other ways, you know, like you can certainly pray and offer all of this up to God on your own and get that same sort of fizzy lifting feeling. but I do love that we have a sacrament for it. You
and,
know?
Right. Like as much as I like it, I still go like once a year.
Yeah.
Like I'm not a weekly confessor.
No.
But I love that it exists. It always is a positive thing in my spiritual life.
Yeah.
And
I put it
at the same time. Yeah. I don't go often.
In the same category.
Because I'm great.
Like the rosary for me, right? It's something that I know I should do more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that, you know, the church says you should do this regularly. And I go, yeah, that's a good call. I should do this regularly.
Yeah.
And then I don't. And when I do it, it feels nice. And I would say that reconciliation is more amplified in that for me. Like when I do it, I really, really like it.
Mm-hmm.
But I have no interest in making it like a weekly practice.
Well, and I don't think you have to.
No.
All right. So maybe we'll just stay here. Like, you know, our like the official guidelines for U.S. Catholics, at least. Is go at least once a year.
Go once a year.
Preferably Advent and Lent if you can.
Yeah.
Which are penitential seasons.
Yeah.
And, you know, those are for like major sins. Like all your little stuff you're supposed to take care of like at the start of Mass.
Right.
So that counts.
Yeah. And the sort of history of it did revolve around Lent. So it's kind of appropriate that we talk about it for our Lenten season because
Advent's a fake penitential
back
season.
Back in the day. Yeah. Back in the day, starting like, you know, as early as 5th century-ish, it sounds like, based on our cursory research, there was the practice of hearing confessions at the beginning of Lent and maybe throughout Lent, depending on, you know, where you were and who the bishop was and stuff like that. And then penance was actually, or absolution was offered on Holy Thursday. So at the end of the Lenten season, you were the beginning in of penance Triduum. Yeah,
the whole time.
Penance was, you know, Lenten. Yeah. Lent was the season for penance, you know, sure. And you kind of give up. So penance actually is something we should probably talk a little bit about more in terms of how that fits in with the sacrament, because for those of you who've never done it, you go and you sit down with the priest, and regardless of how you start, formally or informally, you confess your sins, and then there's a prayer, you know, sometimes a very formal prayer, sometimes just one from the heart where you say, that's what I've done, and I'm super sorry, and I hope to never make those same mistakes again with God's help. And then the priest will offer you absolution, which is forgiveness of sins, not on behalf of the priest, but on behalf of God, you know, kind of as a channel for God's forgiveness. It's a big point right there.
We will come back to that one. Yeah.
And then he'll give you a penance, which is like your homework from reconciliation. Like I don't know if it's like before your state of grace is complete or just as something to do to get you back on the right track. I think your state of grace is
complete at your absolution. But like,
if you walk out of the confessional and you have no interest in doing your penance, you're like, state of grace. Like, I mean, it's already ruined.
Then were you truly repentant?
But are they actually forgiven, right?
I think the absolution is like hinged on your true state of repentance.
Yeah.
And nobody else can know that.
So anyway, the priest will give you some penance. These days,
5 Hail Marys.
It's usually, a set of prayers. Occasionally it'll be stuff like, you know, if you've confessed that, you know, you said something really mean to your sibling, then, you know, they'll ask you to do something nice for that sibling or something like that. You know, like they'll ask you, they'll give you a little bit of homework based on what they think would help you to get back
sometimes
on track.
Sometimes they'll ask you to, like, I've gotten this a lot, like a specific kind of prayer. Like, like you need to pray to God about X, Y, or Z, or ask God specifically for this in your prayer, like kind of focusing your prayer in a way.
Yep. But back in the day,
penance
was sometimes much more extravagant. So throughout the Middle Ages, when they would have these penitential seasons of Lent and things like that, sometimes your penance was to go on pilgrimage or to go on a crusade or to...
Or a very public penance, like, you have to, wear, like, simple clothing, or, like, you're not allowed to, like, enter, like, the communal festive areas.
Yeah. Then there was the whole...
You don't eat anything fancy.
Right. Yeah. Then there was the whole era of the church where it was your penance is X amount of dollars, and that will have your sins be forgiven, right? So
things were not at their most ethical at that point.
Those indulgences became a thing, and they were not a good thing.
Yeah.
So depending on, you know, what era you were in, there were different formats for the sacrament. There were different penances given. And there were different names for it. So we've gone through, like, initially it was kind of called the Sacrament of Penance. Confession and reconciliation weren't part of the nomenclature, which I think is a very, like, I can understand why Mother Church would call it that. Because the priest's job is to forgive the sins on behalf of God, but also to offer the penance, right? So the church would call it penance. That's their job.
Right.
That's what they're going to give you. But the confessor would call it confession or reconciliation. So it's a very, like, hierarchy-centric way of looking at it to call it the sacrament of penance.
Well, and I think, like, post-Vatican II, the focus on the word reconciliation gets heightened because they wanted to emphasize the healing nature of it, that this is a chance to be reconciled to God. So you can see the different focus there, right? Reconciled to God, reconciled to the community versus whatever stuff you're going to do to show you're sorry or to try to fix it.
Yeah, and so the sacrament, when people call it confession, it really does focus on the bad stuff that you are trying to give up, whereas when they call it reconciliation, they're trying to, you know, highlight the fact that
the relational
it's
stuff.
Making it right. You are, you are, you know, just like if you have damaged a friendship with a friend, you sit down with that friend, you have it out, and you clear the air, and you are reconciled with that friend, and same thing is supposed to be happening in your relationship with God through the sacrament, right?
Right. So, another big, like, question I think that non-Catholics and even Catholics, you know, are like, well, why should the priest be the one to forgive my sins?
Yeah.
And like you mentioned, I don't know, like, we never want to explain, like, too much, like, you can look this shit up, but, you know, it's not just the priest doing it. There's, like, a scriptural connection where Jesus, like, says, like, I'm forgiving people's sins.
Yeah.
You have to be sorry. Gotta come to me somehow.
Yeah.
And so we have this representation. And like I was always taught, like, the priest represents God, but also all the people of God, the church itself.
Right.
Right. Because there's no private sin. Everything's a social sin.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that reminder. There is something good about having to say it out loud to another person.
There is.
It is like the Catholic in me that's like, you can pray all you want that you're sorry.
Yeah.
But saying it out loud to somebody else is a different level.
It is. And it
matters.
In my experience, yeah. It brings with it a different level of healing. You know,
totally.
Like you have said it, you have claimed it. And mm-hmm. that sin, you know, it's like.
And somebody has shown you forgiveness after hearing it. Yeah. Like you need both of those pieces.
And there's that tradition of, you know, like by when you name a demon, you now have like control over that demon. You know, like, well, when you name a sin. That sin no longer has control
right.
over you.
Right.
You
it's out
have
in the open.
Control over
yep.
it, you know?
Yep.
And so you have said it, you have put it out there, and you're right. Like, the priest is there to say, God still loves you, I still love you, the community still loves
right.
you, you are still lovable despite, yeah. you know, these things that you've done wrong, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a very, you know, like, it's, when you really think about it that way, that was, it was therapy before therapy was a thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, sit down with somebody. Tell
get
them
it out.
What's going on. Get it out of your system
yep.
and let them send you a message that says you are still okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Know? Yeah.
It's a powerful thing.
It is powerful.
Should you take pictures of it?
This
is where our
is
listener
where
our, and our writer,
so,
author M,
yes.
was writing about her little kids
yes.
going through some of their first sacraments. And because we split up baptism, communion, and confirmation these days,
yeah.
there's years of time between somebody getting baptized where you're sparkly new and clean,
yes.
like whatever,
yes.
you're all good.
Got rid of that original sin.
And anything else you might have done if you were an adult
if
before
you,
them.
Yeah,
like
true.
You're like totally cleared up.
True.
All right. So there's a gap there. And then before you go to communion anytime, you shouldn't have mortal sin
right.
on your soul. So you got to go to confession.
Yeah.
So when this is happening for little kids who've just recently reached the age of reason or maybe a year or two after, so
yeah.
seven or up, going to their first experience of confession,
yeah.
should people be, you know, treating it like another thing to
yeah.
Instagram?
Well, so
I don't know.
This we were talking about, you know, like when we were kids and I did, I don't
yeah.
know if you did you do first reconciliation in second grade as well?
I actually, well, I did everything in fourth grade.
Fourth grade. Okay.
Well, I was baptized earlier, but I did confession and communion in fourth
yeah.
grade.
So mm-hmm. I did, confession and communion in second grade. And I remember distinctly as a second grader that, you know, like they had a bunch of priests come to the church, and with it, so that, you know, all the kids that were there to do first communion or to do first reconciliation, you didn't have to wait like for one priest, right?
Right.
Like the line would be super long. It would
yeah.
take forever. So you get a whole bunch of priests and you hang out in the church and you kind of pick which one you want to go to. And all the parents were there because, you know, they were there to be supportive. And I remember being like terrified. Like there was a lot going on inside of little second grade guests.
He's
like,
always
oh
had
my
a lot
God,
of feelings.
All the things that I've done wrong. And yes, this is a trend that will continue for every reconciliation for the rest of my life.
Healing
like,
tears.
Starting to
maybe
just
that's
get
what the
worked
cocktail
up about it.
Called.
Healing tears. So, but the parents are there and the kids
yeah.
are there and everybody.
It's the whole thing.
And the parents are very proud, you know, and there was
yeah.
a little kind of like a reception afterwards so that everybody
yes.
could sort of take that nice deep sigh of relief and say,
yes.
okay,
have
we've
some
gotten,
dessert.
Yes, let's have some cake. We've gotten past it. Let's celebrate the fact
mm-hmm.
that we've done this.
Yes.
But, what I distinctly recall are, two things. Number one, the fact that not only was I terrified of giving, like, you know, this confession of my wrongdoings, but also the priest that I wanted to give that confession of my wrongdoings to was apparently quite popular.
Oh.
And there was a long line
yeah.
In front of that priest. And there were a couple others that had nobody. And my parents, being
yeah.
indelicate at times, decided that we were not going to wait for that priest. And so we were going to go to this other priest. And at which point, all of the tears that had been waiting to burst forth just came flying out. I didn't get to go to the one that I wanted to. I had to go to this stranger. But the other part that I remember is that he was just such a sweet man. And
well,
he really
this
did
poor, like, sniveling child,
yeah.
like, came to him apparently so repentant.
Right.
He didn't know that it was because he was being rejected in your heart.
Yeah, I know. I know. But,
yeah.
you know, my parents had no interest in it being... some sort of perfect shining moment for me. Right. You know, like reconciliation was, it's a preparation for First Communion. So yeah. it's something to get through, check to get done, box, to check yeah. off the list, you know. But now I can understand how in today's sort mm-hmm. of times that it basically becomes First Holy Communion pre-round one, you right. know, like, so and you've got to make it perfect for the kids.
Yeah. And we're in this era of parents, you know, documenting everything that their children yes. experience all day, every day, because yes. phones in our hands and cameras in our hands. And so I think everything becomes that, no matter yeah. what it is. So here they are, and it's a ritual, like yeah. people, like humans, like your soul's like, ritual, like right, this right, is like right. feeding something I like, and your yes. kid's all cute and dressed up, and like they're doing all the hard work, yeah. parents. And so, M writes that, like, you know, these parents were just, like, not respectful of the time. Like, people were talking a lot and, like, really just viewing it as, yeah. like, spectating these kids going to confession. Yes. And that's kind of what I take more issue with.
Right.
Because, you know, you're bringing your children into the faith. You're wanting them to go through these things. You have to model that.
You do.
A bit. Yeah. You know, I always prefer the first confession services where parents are invited to go to, like, why right. don't you show your kid how?
Yeah.
And that is hard logistically because lines can get long, like the kids should get to go first.
Right.
But parents shouldn't be sitting there like chatting it up and just like snapping away
yeah.
on their phones. They should be, you know, so I side with you that, they, you know, be respectful.
Yeah.
Don't be talking. If you're going to take a discreet photo of your kid, like looking cute, like waiting in line, fine. Or at the party after.
Right.
But we have a hard line to draw here. Guess is ready to lay down the laws.
You don't take pictures
yeah.
of anything that can be done anonymously. That's right. my rule.
It's and private.
The sacrament of reconciliation is always offered as either face-to-face, if yeah. you'd like to sit down with the priest and have a conversation mm-hmm. face-to-face, that's always valid, as is doing it anonymously, whether you do it, you know, like kind of that's what's usually pictured in the movies and stuff is, you know, through the screen in the little confessional right. booth. But a lot of times it's just, you know, like back to back. Like if they don't have the confessional booths mm-hmm. set up for, in that way, you know, you just face away from the priest and the priest faces away from you and you can offer your confession that way. There's a lot of different ways that yeah. you can do it. But if it's an option to do it anonymously, how in the world could you as a parent justify taking, you know, whether your kid's doing it anonymously or face to face, taking pictures of it to immortalize that moment forever when your child is spilling their guts about everything yeah. they've done wrong and the idea is that that will be wiped away.
Right.
And you are Instagramming it forever. Like,
yeah, no, it's a gross violation of their privacy. And also, like, it shows that you just, like, don't understand what's happening.
Right.
Because if we're saying, like, these kids are old enough to understand right from wrong and have chosen to do something wrong and right. are sorry for it.
Right.
Then we need to respect that. Like, that is not, like, a fun time for them.
No.
Like, it's not just something cute, like, your kid is doing. Like, that is a very personal and private thing, and they should be allowed that privacy.
And as you said, it's a ritual, right?
Yeah.
And it's ritual, in my mind, and I'm tempted, you know, I was tempted to say not just that you don't take pictures of things that are done that can be done anonymously, but that you don't take pictures of like those sacramental moments,
right.
you know, but then that starts to include weddings and all sorts of other stuff, you know, and that's,
the lines can be blurry,
but I think that any time where there is that sense of ritual, the ritual should be passed on from generation to generation
yeah.
in the doing of it. Right. And
right.
so you shouldn't have to show pictures of you doing this ritual
yeah.
to say that you've done it. The
sure.
community is there. They've been part of it with you. They've coached you up for it. And now you're ready to teach the next generation how to do it. And that's what we crave as people in that sort of, you know, that
it's the community and the
gap
continuity
in our lives
and the, yeah.
can be filled by that ritual. It can't
right.
be filled by picture.
And there's plenty of times to, like, appropriately take the picture around that, right? Like
right.
if your kid is dressed up super cute or you want the picture of the whole group of them at this
yeah.
like moment in their lives, you take it before or after. You take a group
yeah.
picture. You take it at the party.
Yeah.
Take it at your house, like, whatever. Like,
yeah.
you know, come on.
And so I can understand, you know, like First Communion and weddings
yeah.
and things like that, wanting a picture of the moment of that ritual
yes.
occurring. Discretion, I think, is important. And that's one of the things that Mrs.
Yeah.
Guess and I told our wedding photographers, like, we don't want you all up in our business, like, at the moment that we're getting married. Like, that's
yeah.
for us, you
yeah.
know. And if you can get some good shots of it from the side, like, that's great. But, like, we want to be able to remember this without, like, being blinded by flashbulbs. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And I think there is always something a little awkward when you're at a church event, a sacrament, and the photographer is like up, like right at the front. Like it is distracting. And and that is just a time where you have to kind of make those choices. And it's interesting where people fall in this because I've seen, you know, we've all seen these pictures of like the moment of consecration, like zoomed in. And I get that that's like a beautiful picture.
Yeah.
You see it on all kinds of things. And I think from traditional things and to less traditional people or productions, like everybody seems like somewhere okay with this. And I'm just not.
No.
I'm like I agree. Totally against it.
Yeah. Like, so
I think it takes away from what you should be looking at.
We seem to be in agreement that like, so reconciliation is a no-no. Other sacraments are kind of questionable, be discreet, but the consecration, I agree. Like, no.
Even like from the back with the Zoom ones, I'm like, this is not to be like, because you're just going to like slap it on a website or something. Exactly. Like that's where it doesn't belong.
There's no, and if we don't let, you know, and you know, people fall on different areas of the spectrum on this, but like official church stances, we don't let people go receive communion if it doesn't really like mean something to them. So what's the point of like splashing these pictures all over the place for people who,
I don't know,
for whom it's not just part of their life already, you know? Like, I mean, I guess
it's kind of like wanting both and. We're like, you can't have this, but look how mysterious and weird it is too.
Yeah.
It's like, well, if you think it's holy, then you just let it be.
So, and the way that I think about it is that, you know, like, would I show up, you know, at a place of worship for a religion that I don't belong to, which is not to say that the photographers that take pictures of the consecrations like that don't belong to the Catholic faith.
Right, we
but,
don't know.
You know, but like, would I show up to take pictures of, you know, Buddhist monks in meditation?
Yeah.
No, I would not. Like, that is their life and their ritual, and it elevates them to something higher than whatever picture I could try to take of it. If I was a journalist and I asked for permission or something like that, then that's a different story.
Yeah, I mean, it's case by case in a lot of
but like, stuff. You know, like just in terms of, you know, let me get this perfect shot to put onto my social media account.
It's gross.
Like, it's not, it's not something that I'm comfortable with for that moment of consecration, nor is it something that I'd be comfortable doing in other places of worship.
Totally. Well, that's where we fall in that little bit of sacramental etiquette. There's more coming, everyone. As we head into sacrament season,
for sure
we'll have more opinions on it, but we'd love to hear from you if you go to confession, if you don't, if you like to be anonymous or know the priest,
if you like to be anonymous.
Well, like, I know, like what we were saying earlier,
I know, I'm just saying, send us an email if you like to be anonymous
about confession,
about confession.
Tell us your preferences, we're dying to know.
Yes. You can tweet us at churchdrunkpod.
Email us at churchdrunk@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. Or just throw down some comments beneath, if you're on the website, churchdrunk.com, and you're listening to our podcast there. You can always comment on that or other stories or anything else. We will be updating the blog soon with the Lenten reading list, which I was too sick to put together this week, but I promise I'll be working on it.
Okay.
And then on top of that, we have those Stations of the Cross coming, the musical Stations of the Cross. So if you have ideas for songs that you'd love to hear along with stations, let me know. And yeah, we'll be back in a week, right?
Yep. Ish. Lent is on. Still Lent next week.
Still not halfway
there.
And
the week after.
Still not halfway there yet.
It's fine. I'm not complaining about the length of Lent this year. Yeah. Cheers.
Cheers. Is that one of yours? You're just not going
to
complain about the length?
I'm trying to do it less.
Nice.
I don't know if I could never do it.
Yeah. I'm trying to spend less time on the 24-hour news cycle, but fucking Bob Mueller dropping his report in the middle of Lent.
How about that?
Yeah.
Well, power Lent.
I know, right?
All right. Well.
Well, we'll be back in a week for another episode. Probably still unpacking M's email here.
There's more sacrament etiquette to discuss.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
On Church Drunk, where our list in confession just goes on.
As long as Santa's naughty list.
Yeah.
As long as Lent.
Our list is longer than Lent. Cheers.